a Neon Jazz interview with a jazz musician busy on the double bass for many, many years and the author of the flavor-rich website jazzonfilm.com, Joe Spivey. Coming straight from the heart of Bath in the United Kingdom, Joe has worked hard to compile a comprehensive listing of jazz in the history of film, documentaries, shorts, and TV programs. Over the course of our interview, he discusses the most important artists and songs profiled over the history of TV and cinema, along with a host of very interesting jazz revelations. Please dig this interview, my friends.
I want to, first of all, thank you for taking a little time out.
That's okay. It's fine. Well, thank you for asking me to talk about jazz on film, you know.
My first question for you is, what is your background in jazz and loving and being involved with jazz?
I'm sort of 70 now, so, I always loved jazz. You know, I started off with some Louis Armstrong 78 records that my parents owned. And quite honestly, I've never liked any other kind of music. I've never liked popular music. The Beatles and all that Liverpool sound in this country passed me by. I still always loved jazz. Also, my parents were passionate cinema goers, and as a child, they took us to the cinema all the time, and I always loved it. And when I saw some of these films in the 50s, when I was a teenager, and it featured some of the more modern artists, you know, at the time, like Jerry Mulligan and Chick or Hamilton, some of the Hollywood feature films, I mean, I loved it, you know, and I always had a passion. So I started to collect the films on a VHS or even, you know, 16mm and the posters as well, which I was a big poster collector. And basically, I decided about nearly 15 years ago, I decided to combine it all into one website. I was going to publish a book, but I thought, well, that would soon be out of date. I thought if I had a website, that would be able to do it now. I could update it as new films came out. And now with YouTube, I can put clips onto it as well, which I was a bit concerned before because I thought I'd be sued and I'd be infringing copyright. But these days, I can let YouTube take the flack on that, you see.
Yeah, that's for sure. So tell me how the website began and how much momentum it's created and where you're at today with it, kind of the birth, the growing up, and where we're at today with it.
I had an idea of selling things on it, like jazz videos and things, but I thought, no, this would be too much of a problem. There's lots of other people doing that, like Amazon. So basically, I saw it as a kind of educational research tool and hoping people will come to it. They're trying to find out about different artists. But the thing is, I take responsibility for everything that's wrong with the site, like mistakes and typos, because I don't have anybody researching. I do the lot myself, and I've done the design myself, and I update it on a regular basis myself and search out the material, you know. So that's the main thing. I tend to do it a few times a week, you know, in between doing gigs and different things, you know, and. So it's really like a passion, you know. There's no real business side to it. It's just a mad passion of mine that I hope people are trying to find out about jazz in the cinema or on, you know, or on film. They can look at it and they can find what they're looking for.
When you say gigs, are you a musician?
Yeah, I play the double bass.
Oh, cool, man.
Double bass in some. It's mainly local. I live in the West Country now, but I used to live in London, and I used to play. It was mainly what they call when I started. It was like the end of what they call the traditional jazz boom in this country, and this was like just before the Beatles came along, and they finished off most jazz musicians from making a decent living once the the pop boom started over here. But I mean, I'm still doing quite a bit with various bands and things. But now I just do it, you know, what they call, maybe once a week or twice a week at the most. You know, it's very hard, like even in America, to go out and just make a living playing jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. You're totally right.
I mean, the very best. I mean, because when I've been to the States, I mean, you can see some world class jazz musicians in small bars with half a dozen people in them. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you played with any any big shots, any luminaries?
No,
anybody?
No, not really. No, well, only in this country. I mean, you know, I used to play with somebody, a bloke called Ken Collier, who was a bit of an old legendary traditional player in this country, and he inspired a lot of guys in this country to, you know, he was one of the founders of New Orleans jazz in this country. But when I played with him, he was quite an old man, you know. He was at the end of his career, because he was sort of, you know, he was doing it in the early 50s, you know. But I didn't really start playing jazz till the mid 60s, you know, basically.
Yeah. So let's get back to the website. Why is it so important for us to have a preservation of jazz on film? Why is it so important for us to really look back on all these musicians that have been in film?
Unfortunately, some of the great musicians have never been on the film, and sometimes it's not the early musicians, sometimes it's like the later musicians, like Clifford Brown. There's only about 2 minutes of Clifford Brown on film. There's only about 7 or 8 minutes of Charlie Parker, where somebody like Duke Ellington, and lots of people, there's lots of stuff on film, right from the late 20s, you know, right through to, you know, the 70s, basically, you know. Two things I do focus on is I've tried to build up, one of the pages on my site is about what I call, it's called Black Cinema, and basically, seeing it, well, you must know, you know, if you've been an American, you know, in the States, segregation was, it didn't really exist in this country.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we didn't really have a sort of like a black population until the 50s, you know. There was one or two black people, but over there, but it was very segregated jazz. And basically, there was what they call a black cinema going on. You know, it was a whole industry of black filmmakers making films for black audiences.
Yeah.
That was showed in sort of maybe cinemas where, you know, sometimes if it was mixed, basically the black audience would be, maybe have to be in the balcony and the white people would be downstairs. And I've got pages on that where people can find out about that, because a lot of people, you know, never realised it was a sort of like a black cinema where they was making all, not just, you know, musicals and jazz films, but, you know, things like westerns, you know, the comedies for children, all kinds of things, all with a completely, with black casts, you know.
Yeah. What would you consider some of the most important jazz artists captured on film? If you had to have kind of like a top tier list of, this is what I would really like for you to see to get a well-rounded view of how jazz has been depicted in film, what would you pick?
This is a tricky one. I've got my favourites. I mean, let's say Hollywood films, I always enjoyed. Sometimes the best films with jazz excerpts aren't always very good films sometimes, but the ones with the best jazz excerpts, I always thought the Susan Hayward film, I Want to Live, was great, because it had a fantastic opening sequence with the Jerry Mulligan octet, I think it was, it's septet. Anyway, he's got Art Farmer, Shelley Mann, you know, Frank Rosolino, Bud Shank, I believe, if I remember, Pete Jolly, but all the very best of the West Coast jazz musicians at the time. And so I always used to enjoy that as a youngster when I first saw it. So there's been films like that. I also enjoy some of the old soundies. Do you know much about what they call the soundies?
No, not really.
Well, the soundies, I mean, funny enough, it's more an American thing than over during the war. So a company invented this thing called, basically, it was like a visual jukebox.
Yeah.
And they used to have like a 16 millimeter projector inside this visual jukebox. And you used to put your, I think it was 5 cents in America, put your 5 cents in, and you could press a button and it would show a 3 minute film, you know, like a musical film. Sometimes they were country and western, but at the time there was lots of jazz artists were recorded, people like Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, you know, people like Hoagy Carmichael singing and things like that. And basically these things almost like went into obscurity, but I think people did rescue them in the age of the video, and all of a sudden they got released. But I always found the soundies very, very interesting. I think they're great because they capture what was happening at the, you know, and you know, at the time, you know, and the remarkable bits of film that have been preserved, you know, because a lot of film was completely, you know, lost, of course, you know, because, you know, because of the way the celluloid breaks down, you know, sort of, but, you know, I mean, there's been talk about those, you know, there might have even been some film of the King Oliver Band with Louis Armstrong, but it's never, ever come to light.
Yeah,
so, but those guys, I mean, the great, I mean, the Charlie Parker on the film playing with Coleman Hawkins, I always thought that was a great, great bit of film. I enjoy watching, you know. Well, that was a part of a documentary, and there's a famous film called Jam in the Blues. I think that's one of the very best films. That's Lester Young and Harry Edison.
Yeah.
Play, you know. But these days, there's so much, because, I mean, people could just go to a concert with their iPhone and record some great jazz, you know, jazz on film now.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
Those days, it was very difficult to do that. You know, it was expensive, and that's why people like Clifford Brown, there's hardly anything of people like Clifford Brown.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, some artists just don't exist on film, you know.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at how prolific Charlie Parker resonates throughout the world. It's not just jazz, but music, how little there is on film. And actually, the Mutual Musicians Foundation, which is the oldest union in the world for jazz musicians, is based here in Kansas City. And I just found out the other day that clip of Coleman Hawkins and him can fetch thousands of dollars. Somebody owns a lot of video of Charlie Parker, if you want any of it. It comes at a pretty penny, so.
I imagine, I think most of it is available to buy on DVD and things, you know.
Yeah.
The Parker stuff, unless somebody has a lot more, you know, that I haven't seen, you know. But, you know, I think it's only about, I'd be surprised there's more than 10 or 12 minutes of Charlie Parker on film, I say, you know. I mean, hasn't Kansas City, hasn't it got a Charlie Parker Museum?
We have.
Is there a jazz museum? I mean, a jazz museum.
Yes, it's the American Jazz Museum. It's the Hall of Fame, so to speak, and it's dedicated to all the musicians. It's not specifically to Charlie, but Charlie's gravesite is up here in Kansas City. We have a big monument down at 18 and Vine to him, and we have festivals that are in his honor. So Charlie never really leaves the Kansas City radar, so to speak. Let me also ask you, as such a big jazz fan, why is jazz so important?
To me, well, I don't know. I think was it the American critic Whitney Balin? He said about it was a sound as a prize, and I like the swing. I like the jazz to swing, whatever happens, and I like the move in a harmony. I don't particularly like jazz, especially you get this with pop music where the harmony is quite static.
Yeah.
Which you find with jazz, you know, the best jazz to me, you never know what to expect, you know, sort of, you know, you never know what the drummer's going to do. You never know what the saxophone's going to come up with. And every time when you listen to live jazz, of course, not necessarily a record, because then you become familiar with what they're doing, you know, on a record. But if it's live, you never know what's going to happen. It's always on the edge to me.
Yeah.
With the best jazz musician, let's say, you know. And sometimes they can be, you know, sort of they can just play okay, and other sometimes they can be totally inspired, and that's what I love about it. I loved it. I think it's to do with the idea that you're improvising, and you're not really thinking about this is the way we do it, this is the arrangement. I think they just respond to each other as they're playing, you know, and that's the great joy for me for jazz, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say are some of your favorite jazz albums of all time?
I'm very eclectic. I like one of my favorites is Milestones, not the Miles Davis, the Milestones, the one he made before Kind of Blue. I never liked Kind of Blue too much, but I always loved Milestones, and it had the same lineup almost with John Coltrane and Cannibal Adderley. I always liked that, but I always loved Louis Armstrong's Hot Five, and I loved Jelly Roll Morton's Red Hot Peppers. But also, one of my favourite artists was Clifford Brown, and I always loved all those Max Roach Clifford Brown quintet records, you know, numbers like Joy Spring. I think that's one of my, what they call, Desert Island discs. They've only had so many. But I still like a lot. I like a lot of the modern. I don't like it. I don't like music that's too free. You know, I'm not crazy over. I don't really like Cecil Taylor too much, but I like the early Ornette Coleman quartets with Charlie Hayden because he was such a great bass player, and Don Cherry. But I go more for the kind of, like the post bop stuff. You know, like Horace Silver Quintet, and I also like some of these people who sort of play more swing music. You know, there's a great American, but I think he lives over here now, called Scott Hamilton. Do you know him?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I think he's often here in this country. Whether he lives in Europe, I do not know, but he's often over in this country. But I love his playing. You know, he plays that kind of Lester Young-inspired tenor, you know, sort of, and I think he's great. I think he's a great player, great swinger, you know. And to me, that's what jazz is all about.
Yeah.
Gotta be swinging.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. If you could go back in time and see a jazz show in America, what would you want to see? You go back in any period of time and witness the show. What would you want to see?
Oh, yeah, that's an easy one for me. I'd love to have been at the Massey Hall when Charlie Parker was playing with Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Mingus, Max Roach, and Bud Powell.
Yeah,
it was all at Massey Hall. And apparently, I read somewhere that apparently that concert, it was only about a third full because there was a big major boxing match apparently in America, and everybody was watching the boxing on television.
Wow!
and that's why they said they timed the concert very badly with this very famous. I forget who the boxers were, but it was a very famous boxing match.
Wow!
And this concert did not sell out at all. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
interesting. That's one of life's ironies to me. I mean, I've got a record of it, but it's where, to me, I thought it was the idea of seeing those five musicians together. I mean, when I was a youngster, Ronnie Scott in this country had the Ronnie Scott Jazz Club. He brought a lot of the people across. I mean, I saw Sonny Stitt, I saw Dexter Gordon, saw Charlie Mingus. You know, most I saw, you know, apart from people like Charlie Parker, who probably... he was probably dead in the mid-50s, wasn't he, Parker? And I saw most of the major jazz musicians who came to this country as a youngster, like Louis Armstrong when I was about 15 years old. At my local cinema, you know. I remember going, a friend took me to see him because he knew I liked Louis Armstrong. I was only about 15 at the time.
Yeah, that's great.
So, I mean, you know, so I love jazz. I think all aspects of jazz, you know, most jazz I like, right from the early 20s right up to the present day. But I don't like if it's too strange. In fact, some jazz, it doesn't even strike me as being jazz, but there you go. That's a personal thing with me.
Yeah, sure. No, I understand. And that's the way it works. It's the business of improv.
Yeah, a film I can always recommend. It's a film when Robert Altman made a film called Kansas City. Have you seen the film Kansas City?
Yes, yes.
He made a documentary at the same time called, I think it's called Kansas City Jazz, Kansas City 39 Jazz Revisited. I think it's called, and it's an hour long documentary of all the musicians who are actually on the feature film soundtrack, and they're just blowing in this sort of recreation of this. Kansas City Jazz Club, and it's got all these great people like Joshua Redman, Christian McBride, people like that, you know, Nicholas Payton and people like that, you know. But that is an amazing, amazing documentary. In fact, I think there's a little bit on it on my website, but if you go to documentaries, I think it's called Kansas City Revisited. I think I'll put a little clip of it on there, you know. But that's really worth checking out the whole film.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that. I didn't realize you made an accompaniment documentary to that film. That's great.
Because I remember I saw it in London during the London Film Festival years ago, and Robert Altman was in town, and he introduced it, and he said he didn't know a great deal about jazz, but he says he's assured that all these people were the greatest, some of the greatest jazz musicians playing in America at the time, you know. And they were, like I said, there was a bit like Christian McBride, Nicholas Payton, James, can't remember his name now anyway. I know Joshua Redman's on it, and David Murray as well.
Yeah.
He's on it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, sir, thank you for your time.
Okay, well, thank you for ringing me. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in America, the United Kingdom, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to the very passionate Joe Spybe for his jazz-rich catalog of knowledge via the web and his music. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.